Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Larry Pinkney. It's good to have Larry back. Larry is a dedicated activist. He's a former political prisoner. He was black. He's a Black Panther Party veteran. He formerly served as Republic of New Africa Minister of the Interior. We want to talk about lots of major world and national issues, and there certainly is no shortage of them. There is, I mean, there never is. I can't remember any time since I've been involved in this kind of stuff that I've had a shortage of things to talk about, to write about, and so on. Larry, I don't know what's most on your mind. There's so much on my mind. I don't know what to pick first, so let me let you go. Let me let you choose.
Well, first, let me thank you, my brother Stephen. It's always a delight, a pleasure to be on your show. And let me also thank the audience, the listening audience. Well, you are absolutely correct. There are so many concerns, major concerns, that need to be addressed that is happening in the world today. I guess the maybe three of the concerns that I have deal with what's occurring in Kiev, Ukraine, what's occurring in Egypt, and of course with respect to the United States, what's occurring with regards to the NSA, ongoing NSA debacle, and NDAA. But I'm willing to go where you go, so let's do it.
Oh, let's do it indeed, Larry. Again, I mean, we could play choose an issue roulette and fill up the whole day talking about this stuff. This morning I put out an article on Ukraine. I hadn't written about it this year. I wrote I wrote about three articles on the Ukraine violence in December, starting, I think, early in the month. So it's getting close to 2 months since I wrote my first article. There is no doubt in my mind, Larry, that the strings are being pulled in Washington, and the partnership, the complicit strings, are being pulled in Brussels, the headquarters of the Eurozone countries, the EU countries. So you've got the big ones. You've got Britain, you've got France, you've got Germany. They want Ukraine, like Washington, pulled out of the Russian orbit. They want it co-opted. They want to be able to make Ukraine play by Washington's rules. The rules involved, letting corporations come in and plunder your country with no outside interference whatsoever, exploiting your people, your working people, the ones lucky to have a job, turning them into serfs. I mean, this is the kind of ideology the EU and America supports, and America recruited street thugs. There are also nationalist elements in Ukraine, extremist ones, and they're together and they're creating all kinds of havoc on the streets. For the most part, the police, Larry, showed amazing restraint. There was one day in December where they let it all out and they went beyond what they should have done, but that was the exception. For the most, the protests went on for weeks in December. I think they began in November and they went on for weeks. And except for one day, the police were really remarkably restrained. Well, the violence in the past week has been worse than ever. I think we're in about day six, maybe day seven, of the most recent violence. The government did a foolish thing. It passed a law that placed unreasonable burdens on public demonstrations with prison terms for doing things that at most should be get slaps on the wrist. In some cases, it could be up to 15 years. It was really a legislative war on public demonstrations. The law that passed should have been one that targeted only the violence, should not have targeted peaceful protests. They should be legitimate everywhere, but they went too far. Extreme violence followed the passage of the law, but it was stirred up by the dirty hands in Washington, Larry, and also in Brussels, and we see it going on. There have been some talks by both sides, the president of the country, Viktor Yanukovych, and one of the leaders, maybe more than one of the leaders, talking about making some compromises. I think the government is willing to bend a good bit, but it looks like but the opposition wants to demand that the government won't go along with. The opposition wants the government to step down, to hold a snap election. Now, this is America talking. Larry.
Right.
It's not the people doing the negotiating. So anyway, I think we're at a standoff, and I think the violence pretty much is continuing. Lots of people protesting, and I think the violence is continuing. It's a very ugly situation.
Yes, and it's really becoming uglier every day, and I have to absolutely concur with you. I absolutely agree with your analysis, Stephen. The reality is that the United States, i.e. Washington, D.C., CIA, NSA, CIA, and the other intelligence organizations of the U.S. are deeply, and I emphasize, deeply involved in stirring up this kind of violence. In fact, as you may have mentioned, I think you did, there are thugs. They have made sure that there are actual thugs on the streets in various cities in that country, i.e. Ukraine, to make sure that there is an intense hatred, if you will. And it's obvious. Let's just look at the geopolitical situation. The United States and again, Washington, D.C., we're talking about the U.S. government, not the people, but the U.S. government, that's Obama and his minions, in addition to Brussels. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because the EU is working hand in glove with the United States to really try to destroy the backbone, the economy, the political integrity of Ukraine. This is what they're attempting to do, to destroy it. I've noted that in 20 cities, I believe this happened just today, there are demonstrations in 20 cities. Now, Ukraine is not a huge country, so if you have demonstrations, and these are pro-government, or they're dubbed as pro-government demonstrations, but I don't really think it's about pro-government. It's about the people saying, look, this is our country. We want the dirty hand of Washington and of Brussels out. Get out. Get out. Let us handle our country, our national affairs. Get out. I mean, you even had parliamentarians from the EU as well as representatives from the U.S., actually over there in Ukraine, doing their utmost to stir up as much. And I'm just going to be blunt. I think their aim is to stir up violence, because while the government, certainly the Ukrainian government, definitely made a huge mistake in terms of the law that it recently passed, what they did was they played into the hands of Washington and Brussels. This is, of course, exactly what Brussels and Washington, D.C. wanted them to do. However, it's quite clear, as in the case of Syria, by the way, it's quite clear that the vast majority of people, the vast majority of the Ukrainian people, want to handle their own affairs, and they want Washington and Brussels out of this. So this is what we see, the same scenario over and over and over again in nations throughout the world. And I want to add this very quickly, Stephen. You know, the U.S. has been trying to encircle, not trying to, has been encircling Russia and China militarily, and they've been trying to outflank them economically, but they haven't been successful at that thus far. So what they're doing, they're placing missiles around Russia. They are sending a number of components of the U.S. naval fleet, or one of the U.S. naval fleets, over in the area of China. I mean, this is the same old scenario. And you see, when that doesn't work, or as if that's not enough, then they send in, just like they do inside this country, they send in agent provocateurs to stir up as much destabilization as they possibly can. They want to destabilize Ukraine. they want to destabilize Ukraine. And we have to keep that in mind, just as they want to destabilize Syria. So having said that, I'll zip my lips on that.
Oh, absolutely, Larry. I agree with you right down the line. There is no question about what's going on. As far as Ukraine goes, America has an agenda that it wants to dominate every country. It wants to get rid of sovereign, independent governments. It wants to replace them with pro-Western stooge governments. So it's against Assad in Syria for that reason. It's against the Ukraine government for that reason. The current president, Viktor Yanukovych, they got rid of him in 2004, the so-called Orange Revolution. I wrote about it back then. So here we are a decade later. They're trying to do it again. The tactics were a little bit different then. There were lots of people in the streets, not the kind of violence that we see going on now. But the Ukrainian Supreme Court annulled a legitimate election. New ones were held, and everything was manipulated to public opinion, especially against the Yanukovych government, and a pro-Western one was elected to take his place. Well, it was pure hell during his time in office, and Ukrainians voted it out of office and reelected Yanukovych. So he's the president now again. And now what we have going on may be Orange Revolution 2.0. And it doesn't matter what Ukrainians want. It matters what the moneyed interest wants, the moneyed
right.
interest in the EU, in America. And it doesn't matter how many people get hurt, and plenty of people have, including the police. In my article I got out yesterday, not this morning. I get out so many, Larry, I lose track of what I put out what day or what I say in what article, for that matter. But in my last Ukraine article, I said that over 200 police were injured by the protesters. I never heard of anything like that in America. Did you?
No. And in fact, you know, I was paying attention to a number of international, quote-unquote, news outlets, a number of them, because you certainly don't get anywhere near real coverage in this country. So I look elsewhere. In any event, my point is this, that I understand that police have actually, that I'm talking about Ukrainian police, have actually been, quote-unquote, taken hostage. I understand they were released recently. Allegedly, they were also tortured. But, I mean, can you imagine anything like that ever happening here? Obviously, when I say here, I mean in the U.S., obviously, this is a setup. This is aimed, you know, and as you were talking, Stephen, you know what I thought about when we talk about the current government and in Ukraine. I thought about, and you were giving the history, I thought about Hugo Chavez. Remember that? Remember how the U.S. interests, the moneyed interests, overthrew Hugo Chavez, and the people said no and put him back in as the president of that country. As you were talking about the history, the recent 10-year history of Ukraine, that popped into my mind. I mean, it's the same scenario over and over and over again. Though, quite frankly, I think it's gotten even worse under Barack Obama.
Oh, absolutely. Indeed, I remember April 2002 for 2 days when the powerful interest, Washington manipulating everything, got rid of Chavez for 2 days, and he literally came back almost from the dead. Well, it took a while, but Washington finally killed him. They just ousted him, but it failed because of people power and support from the Venezuelan military, at least a good part of the military, enough to put him back in office. Well, Washington decided it wouldn't make the same mistake again. They could have killed him back then, but they didn't, and he came back. So they decided they would do it, and they indeed did. I think April last year, I think we'll come up to the first anniversary of his death. But absolutely, I believe that Washington killed Hugo Chavez. You know, when there's a system in place that's against the predatory system that is in America, in Europe, and what America wants in all countries everywhere, they target the leader for a regime change. They do it any way they can. You know, coup d'etats, assassinations, sanctions that don't do anything to the ruling people, but cause enormous hardship to ordinary people in the country. And when everything else doesn't work, you go to war.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the next step. in the Ukraine situation. Well, Washington wants, I mean, you mentioned important things about Ukraine, Larry. Washington doesn't just want another country to plunder along with the EU countries. It wants to weaken and isolate Russia. It wants to creep closer to Russia's border. Russia is its one of its two main global rivals, Russia and China. So America's agenda is getting rid of them as easily as they can without getting into a nuclear war. I would imagine the thinking is in Washington, because a nuclear war would end up destroying everybody. But there definitely is a possibility that there could be a nuclear war out there, even though nobody intends it. But again, co-opting Russia the way it was in the 1990s under Boris Yeltsin, co-opting China. America has never co-opted China since it transformed itself under these Chinese names drive me crazy. Anyway, the first Chinese leader back at the end of the 1970s, Deng Xiaoping,
that's
the Chinese leader. He transformed China, and one of his famous quotes that I remember was, as China went from a communist country to a capitalist one, and yet it's still called communist China. It absolutely is not communist China. It's got a government that doesn't let anybody win. Same government runs things, hands things to the next government when it steps down. But Deng Xiaoping changed the system. It's now so-called free market. China is growing at a pretty good clip, slowing a little bit now. It'll probably slow more ahead as it can't keep up the tremendous rate of growth that it has for so long, 10% a year, year after year for a good bit of time. But anyway, you've got a powerful China. It's a juggernaut of a world economy, number two to America. It also has a very powerful military. It's also a very large country, about the size, I think, geographically to America. And Russia, of course, has the world's largest landmass and can match America's nuclear arsenal and the kind of delivery systems that they can send these missiles off anywhere. But Putin bashing is standard practice, much different than in the 1990s. And I just wrote an article a few days ago about bashing Russia. Beating up on Russia, I called it. I've written bashing Russia articles and bashing Putin ones, so I need to change my titles every now and then, Larry. I start running out of them. But the latest one was called Beating Up on Russia, and it covered an awful lot of ground. Where this is going to go, I have no idea. But as old as I am, Larry, in my lifetime, I fear the possibility of something awful happening again. Dare I say the kind of war that nobody would ever want to fight, but Russia is not very pleased with the way America treats it, belligerently and so on, and anything can happen going forward. But the battle for the soul of Ukraine, which I like to characterize it that way, is really a battle, on the one hand, to do more damage to Russia, and on the other hand, to exploit another country for the kind of profit that America wants when it wants its independence toppled and a subservient pro-Western government put in its place.
That's right. And I totally, again, concur with you that this is a twofold attack being launched, first and foremost, by the U.S. government, and, of course, with its EU partners against Ukraine, but also against, when I say against Ukraine, I mean against the everyday ordinary people of the Ukrainian people, but also against Russia itself, against the government and nation of Russia. And this, of course, again, I reiterate, this is same old, SOS, same old stuff, okay, that the U.S. government continues, and corporate-owned U.S. government continues to totally dismiss the needs, the legitimate aspirations and wants and needs of the people. And they do it here. This is what they do in this country. So why wouldn't they do it in countries around the world and vice versa? And I think we really need to be looking at this from the overall picture, because that's very, very important. And Stephen, this is insanity once again, just as the situation is and was spurred on by the United States in Syria. This is insane. And, of course, It could lead, and this is what we need to understand, it could, this situation could lead to a devastating nuclear war where everyone, repeat, everyone loses.
Well, it certainly could, and it's something that's on my mind. I lived through World War II. I was pretty young, but I'm old enough to remember it, and the nightly newscast that my father used to listen to every evening, I remember that very well. And as a young boy, I really wanted the things that I enjoyed, not news about a war or politics or the things that I pay closest attention to today. But, you know, what does a 6 or 7 year old want? You know, and back in those days, I could listen to a lot of stuff during the daytime. You know, The Adventures of Superman or Captain Midnight, that's what I was interested in. But I had a number of my family members in the war, and thankfully they all came back. And my dad was in World War One, so we had two world wars. Is it out of the question that we could have a third one? I don't think so at all. I think people thought it was impossible to have one, let alone two. We very definitely could have a third.
As they said, what did they say? What did they call World War One? What? The war to end all wars?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And since then, we've had major wars, not just World War II, but Korea, Vietnam. I mean, the list goes on, and even as we speak with one another right now, Stephen, wars are raging. U.S.-instigated wars are raging throughout the African continent, and what we're witnessing in Ukraine is all with the dirty hand of Washington, the Obama regime, and of course, his minions, his allies of the EU.
Well, very definitely true, Larry, and very, very sad and disturbing. And you can look, if we look just at the Middle East alone, you've got so many countries that are going through incredible turmoil. Well, shift over to East Asia, to Eurasia, and we've got the terrible situation in Afghanistan, America's longest war. Since October 2001, this war has been raging, and year after year, America has said it plans to get its forces out by the end of the following year. Well, now the deal is to get them out by the end of this year. Will they really be gotten out? They're mostly out of Iraq, but they're not entirely out of Iraq. America built super bases in both countries. There are U.S. forces on these bases, and they'll stay on these bases. America didn't conquer these countries to leave. My God, I mean, America defeated Japan in World War II, and there are thousands of U.S. troops still there. Same thing in South Korea, countries in Europe. Italy was defeated. Germany was defeated. U.S. forces remain in these countries. So they'll stay in Afghanistan. They'll stay in Iraq. America's presence is very much felt in Libya. But it's the aftermath. It's what's going on that's really felt. An incredible cauldron of violence and human misery, where poverty is extreme, unemployment is extreme. There are people getting killed in Libya, in Iraq. Dozens of people are being killed on a daily basis because of America's wars. Look at Syria. Syria, incredible violence. We can shift there in a little bit, Larry. Incredible violence. It's Obama's war. He launched the war. His crimes are blamed on the president of Syria, Bashar Assad. He absolutely hasn't committed them. He's defending his country from foreign invaders. So, again, Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq. We've got conflict sporadically in Lebanon with car bombs going off and people being killed and buildings being damaged or destroyed. The situation in Libya, Iran has been targeted short of war. But if Syria goes down, then Iran is very, very vulnerable. I would suspect that Iran might be next because it's a key independent sovereign country in the region, and America wanted a place like the others with a stooge government. So right now you've got some diplomacy replacing belligerence. Will it last long? We could talk about that too.
I doubt it. I'm hopeful, okay, but the reality is that it's the last thing that the United States wants is effective diplomacy, and because this would mean that governments and nations could remain sovereign and independent. And that, of course, that too is the last thing that this corporate-owned U.S. government wants. It does not want sovereign, independent nations or peoples on Mother Earth. It just cannot, will not tolerate that. So I think we, and I mean, look at our situation right here in this country. You know, this fake called democracy. It's a fake. It's a sham. You know, the Democrats and Republican parties are one party. It's a sham. And you know, we, again, I always go back on your show. I always go back to saying it's up to we the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. It's up to us. We are the only ones who can reverse this. And Lord knows, I hope we can do it in time to save ourselves, to save humanity, to save our precious Mother Earth.
That's a real struggle, Larry. And I have to say, it's up for grabs whether we're going to win or lose this battle. I mean, it's a battle that has to be won because the alternative is so potentially devastating. It simply is too potentially destructive to risk letting something that bad happen. But we've been heading that way. I mean, we can see it. Before 9/11, things were pretty dismal in a lot of respects, but in some respects they were a good bit better. The extreme inequality and violence that's going on in the country and around the world hadn't reached the state that it's in today. But post 9/11, everything changed. It simply has created a situation where it seems year after year things go from bad to worse. Chicago is Obama's nominal home. I guess wherever he was born, I don't know where he was born. I guess he claims Hawaii, wherever it was. But Chicago has been his home for a good many years. He spent many years in Chicago, taught at the University of Chicago Law School, taught constitutional law of all things. A guy who trashes the Constitution taught constitutional law. But anyway, he comes back to Chicago every now and then. And I once had on this program, Larry, an activist for universal health care, a doctor, who's he's in his 80s now and retired, or at least mostly retired. His medical partner was Obama's doctor. I don't know the man's name. I could probably look it up. But he was Obama's doctor when Obama lived in Chicago. That's about the closest I ever came to him, Larry. I don't want to get any closer to him than that. But, he calls Chicago his home, so he does come back, he certainly is up to no good. Oh, the point that I wanted to make, I ramble, and I forget the point that I wanted to make. I remember election night, November 2008. Where it was literally New Year's Eve in Chicago. It was more than New Year's Eve. There's a major park downtown called Grand Park. Chicago has a lot of parks, but Grand Park is where a lot of big events take place, concerts and stuff like that. Well, on election night, they had a big TV screen set up in Grand Park, and I think it was around 10 o'clock in the evening when the final results were announced over the screen, and the city went absolutely wild, absolutely wild. We finally got rid of George Bush, and we got a guy in who's going to represent the people. What a joke.
Yeah, sick joke. What a sick joke. In fact, this man, Barack Obama, has, you know, he is Bush on steroids. Obama is clearly Bush on steroids. And he has not only continued the policies, as you well know, Stephen, but he has exacerbated the policies. And so, of course, we have these horrors happening all over the world, and even in this country, economically, politically, socially. Of course, this is their game plan. You know, this power elite, this same group of people who have been, you know, intent on dominating, controlling, manipulating, instigating, doing whatever they can to maintain their insatiable, greedy appetite. Whatever happened, Stephen, whatever happened to a nation's sovereign right? Whatever happened to self-determination? Whatever happened to the right of the people to make their decisions without outside interference. I mean, we really need to think about that and to do something about that for ourselves, not just for people in other parts of Mother Earth. But if they do it there, which they are doing, they're doing it to us too.
Yeah, they do it to ordinary people, and the moneyed interests, as I like to call them, have never had it so good, and ordinary people have never suffered so much as they are now, at least going back to the 1930s during the Great Depression, when there was an awful lot of hardship that I was much too young to remember. I certainly never saw any of it in my household, but I know my parents didn't have it so easy back then. So we've got this situation going on, and we've got rich folks in America that have never been richer. Larry, let's take a break, and we'll come back and pick this up.
Okay.
Well, we'll jump right back in with Larry Pinkney. Lots to talk about. We can leave Franz Joseph Haydn for another time. Into the program, we'll bring Franz back. He's welcome as a guest on this program anytime. Maybe somebody can transfer that message to the afterlife. Anyway, Larry, how about Syria? I've written so many volumes about so much about Syria going back to around March 2011. When the current conflict began, and I make no bones about what's going on. Syria is Obama's war. He launched it. It was planned long before he came into office. I believe it was planned in the 1990s. And again, you've got the situation of an independent sovereign government, and all kinds of lies are made up about it. The truth about Syria's government is it's authoritarian, and it has been for decades. It's not the kind of government I support. But it's not the kind of ruthless, despotic government that exists in so many countries in the Middle East alone. America's closest allies, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, other countries, Egypt. Oh, my goodness, we could talk about Egypt. Egypt under Mubarak, and much worse now, under the military junta with a fake front civilian interim government and a constitution that was just passed with a very low turnout. I think the numbers were doubled. The official turnout was called. The first count on the official state newspaper said about 33%, then they upped it to about 38%, and I don't think it was any more than half that number. And they said the majority vote was over 98%. Well, even Mubarak wasn't that stupid, Larry. He won all his elections only winning by about 90%. Now, how 90% of Egyptians would love that bastard, I have no idea. And certainly 98% of Egyptians don't like the sitting government and its ruthlessness that just murders people on the streets. So we could talk a little bit about Egypt. We could talk about Syria. You choose. We'll go to one, then go to the other.
Well, I want to jump back for a moment to Syria. I think that it's really important for us to understand that Syria is representative of Syria to the ruling elite, to the power elite of the United States, these corporate bloodsuckers. Syria represents an obstacle. They want to take it down. And of course, you have the lamestream, so-called mainstream. I call it lamestream, corporate stream news media. We don't get news over here. We get nothing but straight propaganda. ABC, CBS, PBS, Fox News, all of them. We're getting government propaganda, corporate government propaganda. Anyway, the point that I'm making, or attempting to make, is that we have to, as everyday ordinary people, black, white, brown, red, yellow, we have to take the bull by the horns, as my dad used to say, and really understand that the only way that we are going to affect any kind of local, national, or international change is to say no to all of these corporate-owned, blood-sucking, lying politicians, and I don't care what their color or their gender is. In fact, that's has become totally irrelevant. We have to say no And this is when jumping back to Syria, they have demonized the Syrian government, but they're buddies with the government. By they, I'm talking about the U.S. of course, the U.S. government are close buddies with an outright authoritarian, far more than authoritarian, but blatant dictatorship in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, as you mentioned. And Yemen. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So Syria stands in the way of U.S. Plans for hegemony. And all I mean by hegemony is domination. They want to dominate, dominate, dominate. These people run this corporate-owned government, I don't even know if I can call them people. I will call them creatures, because I just can't fathom or imagine people acting the way they do. And the horrors that have taken place in Syria, I mean, we're talking about everyday, ordinary people who are being murdered on a constant level by so-called rebels, that's U.S.-backed rebels. We're talking about people across the political and religious spectrum that are being butchered, and they're backed by the United States and its Western allies. This is unacceptable. It's just unacceptable.
Yeah, it really is, and Syria has certainly got a lot of attention on this program, Larry. There is no question that America backs the worst of the elements that are opposing the Assad government, and most of the fighting forces have been imported from dozens of other countries, including Western ones, tens of thousands of these people, and it's amazing, Larry. I guess there are a lot of crazies in the world that no matter how many of these people get wiped out or injured in fighting going on almost 3 years now, the ranks are replenished with more crazies brought in to replace them. They're getting weapons that can cause an awful lot of harm. They can't match what the Syrian military has. It's a trained military, and these people are just kind of a segmented, well, there are a number of opposition elements, and there's no central coordination. I guess that's what they call command and control. So Syria's military is a professional one, and these people are just gangs that are brought in, and they have leaders, but there are a good number of them. They're very fragmented, and they've been sometimes went for weeks. They were battling each other. They were killing hundreds of each other, one group battling another group for control, for power, because it wants its way imposed if they win, which they won't, not unless the U.S. Air Force gets involved the way it did in Libya. But so far this hasn't happened in Syria. So they're depleting their own ranks, but more are coming in. You've got Saudi money supporting this. You've got CIA elements involved. You've got U.S. Special Forces. And Assad, who is defending his country against a foreign invasion, is blamed for the crimes that these people commit. I've quoted U.S. officials, Obama, John Kerry, making the most appalling statements over and over again, wrongfully blaming a guy who's protecting his own people. And it shows when he shows up in a town or a village or an area where the army has gotten rid of the terror gangs, the death squads who were there, the people come out en masse to greet him or greet the Syrian forces and thank them for what they did. That shows the effect that this is having on the people. The people overwhelmingly support the sitting government, much more so than when the conflict began. So it shows what side they're on. The deal is, according to America, which box out the orders, and the so-called the element that's negotiating. Well, there are negotiations going on in Geneva now. We had them in the middle of 2012. They failed. They're going on again now. And Washington stipulates the terms. In other words, Washington wants to dictate Syrian policy. And the bottom line is Assad must go. Syrian people have nothing to say about this. It's Washington rules that have to be imposed. So with the words that come out of the mouths of the so-called Syrian National Council, the so-called Friends of Syria. You don't need friends like that, Larry.
That's right. That's right. And these friends, of course, are in reality nothing more than puppets of the United States, of the CIA, of the money interest, to use your term, that are really trying to destabilize and overthrow not just Assad. It's not, to me, it's really not even about Assad. It's about the right of a sovereign government. It's about the right to exist without outside interference. This is what the U.S. is doing, and its Western allies are doing, is in blatant violation of numerous international laws. Blatant violation. And then Obama, the Obamatron, Mr. Drone Man himself, and as you mentioned, Secretary of State Kerry, have the unmitigated audacity to turn around and talk about the people and freedom and justice when they have really distorted and disfigured the very definition of those words. Not only there, but of course they're doing it here too. It's just on a different level. But the end result is we don't control our government. Our government does not speak for us. It does not represent us. It does not represent our interests, be they economic, political, or social. And guess what? They want to make sure, blatantly, this government, wants to make sure that countries such as Syria, in this case, do not have the right to self-determination, do not have the right to national sovereignty, do not have the right, whether we're talking about Ukraine, whether we're talking about Egypt, whether we're talking about Venezuela, no matter where we're talking about, countries in Africa, the same game. So, yes, to me, it's about the right of a sovereign nation to exist and to truly be sovereign, to truly be sovereign. How would the United States, how would people in this country feel if Russia, China, India all sent elements over here to destabilize this government that and to bring about some kind of so-called civil war or unrest? They wouldn't like it. They wouldn't like it, would they? I wouldn't like it. We have no business. This government has no business involving itself and dictating terms to sovereign nations.
Indeed, Larry, if China or Russia even sent its ships into the Gulf of Mexico or off the east or west coast of America, that would be a casus belli. I mean, we could end up with World War III.
Mm-hmm.
And yet America does this all the time.
It wants to co-opt
every country in its own area. So you surround China and Russia with U.S. military bases. You send your fleet over there, which is what's going on. You cause all kinds of disruptions. I mean, this is the stuff that's going on a daily basis. And Obama has what he calls his Asia pivot. It's not that America is leaving other regions that are valuable, like the Middle East, because the Middle East is very valuable because of all the resources there, mainly oil and gas. So America is there to stay. But the issue in East Asia is China's growing strength, and Russia is a strengthening country. So you've got these two powerhouses that are definitely growing and benefiting at the expense of America. America is going downhill. Russia and China are going uphill. At some point, it'll be a day of reckoning for America. I certainly hope it doesn't end in war. But Washington's solution, as we know, Larry, is, you walk in with a big stick and you do more than shake it. So America's military gets shown, and war is a typical strategy that's used. And U.S. wars are going on around the world. We've got direct ones like Afghanistan. We've got the indirect ones where U.S. special forces are in dozens of countries all around the world, and they don't go in there as goodwill emissaries. They go in there to cause all kinds of mischief, disrupt the government, destabilize them, maybe kill people. This is the kind of stuff that America supports. And if any other country did this to harm U.S. interests, Larry, again, I say we could have World War III.
In an instant, in an instant. And,
yes.
You know, this is what we need to understand. And you're right. The day of reckoning is rapidly approaching. And ultimately, if we don't do something about it, we the people right here, everyday ordinary people in this nation, it'll be a day of reckoning that none of us will survive. You know, I just want to mention something very quickly, Stephen, because you mentioned it and I forgot to bring it up. We were talking about Korea. Korea, by the way, is nothing more, and I'm talking specifically South Korea, okay, is no more than a stooge of the United States, has been ever since World War II, and actually prior to that as well. But there is a DVD, I don't know if you've seen it, but I would encourage you, you'll find it both distressing and encouraging simultaneously. If people can get it, I don't know, I guess you can go online and find it. But it's called Ghost of Jeju Island. That's J-E-J-U Island, Ghost of Jeju Island. It's about the folks who are struggling in South Korea to, again, really have some sovereignty and to stop the Obama regime from, or at least slow them down, if not reverse them, from building more military bases in what was a wonderful, peaceful island, the island of Jeju, J-E-J-U. I just wanted to mention that. As I said, it'll be both distressing, but it'll also be extremely hopeful.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Jeju Island. It's been a good while, Larry, but I wrote one article about the Pentagon's plan to stick a U.S. base there against the overwhelming opposition of the Korean residents. It'll literally destroy their wonderful home. It'll destroy it, and this is what happens when a U.S. base goes in. I forget the details of Jeju, but it's a very special place in South Korea, and its pristine nature should really be preserved. But you stick a U.S. Naval base in there, and all of the stuff, the pollution and everything else that goes with it, and you simply destroy that pristine status. And that's what the people have been fighting, literally putting their necks on the line, fighting the U.S. military and their own government. But it's a very tough battle, and I haven't kept up with it, but my guess is they're losing it, and maybe it's already lost.
Well, the last I've heard, and I go on their site as much as I can, they're battling and battling and battling. When I say they, I'm talking about the everyday folks. And as you know, Stephen, it's across all lines. It's across all political, or virtually all political and religious lines. There are people who are quote-unquote not religious. There are people who are Catholic. There are people who are, well, you name it, okay, who have come together and said no. And it's not only, as you mentioned, that they're trying to stop this base from being built that will destroy the pristine nature of the island, but it also, as they made clear in this DVD, it also makes what? It makes them a target. Should a conflict break out, they would be targeted because a huge U.S. base would be there. I mean, God, it's just not acceptable.
Yeah, it sure isn't. And think about everything going on at home, Larry, where even back in the 1990s, we had a situation where ordinary people could benefit at least a little bit from the real economic growth that was taking place then. They didn't benefit the way they should have, but at least they got something. There was at least a minimal sharing of the benefits of economic growth with ordinary people. Employment was high. I can remember the monthly jobs numbers back then. The Marcos used to get upset when too many jobs were created. The Marcos were afraid that maybe it would create an inflationary effect, or the Fed would have to start raising interest rates, stuff like that. And now we have an exact opposite situation where unemployment, instead of the fake 7% or so that's reported, it's over 23%. Because anybody unemployed longer than a certain period of time becomes a non-person and not counted anymore. You know, if you if you can't find a job through no fault of yourself, you're blamed for it. So they simply strip you out of the potential worker roles, and you don't exist. Now, it wasn't that way going back to the 1980s. So if you calculate unemployment based on the way it was done then, it's over 23%. What kind of an economy has that kind of a situation, along with terrible poverty, that the real poverty is much, much higher than the official numbers, because the Census Bureau numbers for a family of four, it's about $23,500, I believe. $23,500 for a family of four to stay above the poverty line in cities like Chicago or Cincinnati or Detroit or any big or medium-sized U.S. city. Maybe if you live in the woods, you could get by on an income at that level. But if you live, I know how expensive it is to live in Chicago, and I live extremely modestly. I mean, you can go through a lot of money and buy nothing more than see that you pay your rent, that you buy food, that you take care of any of your medical expenses. And if you have a young family, if you're worried about sending kids to college, how can you do that with an income like that?
You absolutely cannot. And this is the point that we have to understand. That's why I try to link what's happening throughout Mother Earth and other nations. This is, it's happening to us. It's just happening to us on a slightly more veiled level, but it's happening to us. I mean, what we are actually experiencing in the United States is what I call economic apartheid. Or apartheid, pronounce it however you want, but it's economic apartheid, okay? And as you had mentioned earlier in the show, the bloody rich are the filthy bloody rich. Why, they are living high on the hog, more now than at any time in this country's history. The poor, the real figures of the poor, and people don't like to think of themselves as poor. Well, I'm poor. All right? I'm poor economically. I'm poor financially. But I'm rich socially and politically and culturally. So we can be both poor and rich at the same time. What I'm talking about is poor in terms of surviving, economically surviving. And the vast majority of people, I mean, just in the going off approximately 6 years that Obama, the Obamatron drone man, Mr. Hypocrite himself, has been in office, the economic situation for people across the board of all colors and both genders has plummeted. It was already bad under Bush. It's even worse now, and it's deliberate. This didn't happen by osmosis. It didn't happen by coincidence. This was designed to be this way. We better wake up. We better wake up at home so we, again I say, to save ourselves, to save our children, to save our sisters and brothers in other countries, to save our planet, Mother Earth.
Yeah, we sure do have to think about those things and do something constructive. Larry, every time I go out on the street in Chicago, which I would do to run an errand or something, it can be at varying times of the day, but it shocks me, especially with the kind of awful weather we've had this winter, a little bit in December, but especially in January, when extreme cold, and I see people sleeping on the streets. If I go out early, which I do sometimes to beat a crowd, to run an errand at the local drugstore, I'll see people crouched in a hallway, covered with whatever they have to cover themselves. And I'm talking about weather that is extremely dangerous to be out in, to have exposed skin for too long a period of time. Now, these people, I can't see their faces when they're crouched in doorways or maybe on a bench. They've covered their whole body, so they protected themselves that way. But can you imagine living that way, sleeping that way in sub-zero weather?
In the United States of America. Okay, we're not talking about some other country. We're talking about right here in Chicago is the heartland. It's the heartland, and it's all over the United States, whether it's San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Newark, Florida. It doesn't matter. It's all over the country. And again, this is by plan. These folks know, when I say these folks, these bloodsuckers know precisely what they're doing. It's painful to me, but more than painful, it enrages me. We have got to turn this around.
Absolutely, Larry. And we're not talking about just a handful of people. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people across America. It's bad enough to be homeless. I guess it's easier to have it happen in Florida than during a Chicago winter or a Minneapolis winter. But it's pretty horrible to go through this anytime. I mean, we take this stuff for granted that we have a roof over our heads and we can at least get a meals in our body on a daily basis. And when I see people on the street with a cup in their hands, even in the cold weather, asking people for anything, a nickel, a dime, a quarter, so they can get themselves some food, certainly not to get themselves a roof over their heads. I just can't imagine suffering like that, but we hand trillions of dollars to bankers, and we let these kind of people just rot in the open air and freeze to death on streets. The richest country in the world, Larry, we don't give a damn what happens to ordinary people. We just want to make rich people richer.
Exactly. Exactly. And we've got to change that. As Dr. King said, you know, our sense of spirituality, we've got to, and I'm not calling on anybody when I say spirituality, I mean our sense of what is good and what is decent, okay? We've got to regain that. We've got to regain our humanity. Unacceptable the way it exists today.
We just can't go on. We can't go on doing what we're doing now. And again, I mean, if we do, it has a very, very bad ending. So we have a choice. We can either try to save ourselves by reversing things, or we can let it get to a point where there could be an explosion. Conditions can get so bad, that's what revolutions are made of. I think I'm out of time.
Wow.
Well,
yeah,
I look forward to getting you back next month for more. It's indeed a grim situation. You're on it. I'm on it. I'll never stop speaking out about this stuff. I keep writing daily articles about it. It's vital to do, and I intend to keep doing it. Many thanks,
ditto,
Larry.
Ditto. Stay strong, my brother. Stay strong.
Thank you, Larry. Join us again tomorrow. We'll be back on 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.